your subscribers should be your VIPs. Like, they're your brand advocates. Subscribers are the ones that run around and talk about how much they love your product to 30 people. Use them to your advantage, not just to like milk their credit card every month, but like get their feedback. They care. There's so much more attention now on like these Facebook groups and all these other things. Like, you want to sample a new product and get feedback? Do it to those people.
Welcome back. I hopped on Twitter yesterday because Cody ditched me to do CMO stuff. And I said, who should I talk to? And there were a lot of Gina fans. It's funny because I don't think many people know that Gina and I know each other for a couple of years now. Hi, Gina.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for, I guess, Twitter. Thank you for thinking of me, not even Eli, but thank you for listening to the Twitter fans.
This is a long time coming. Do you want to give a little background of how we know each other, how we met, how we got here, what we've done together?
Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know Gina, prior to Retexion, I have an agency called Lunar Solar Group, all of the email creative that I post all the time. Olipop, I remember making their first welcome flow. So like, that's like how far back, I don't even remember what year, I remember which WeWork office we were in, but I don't even like remember what time that was. But got to work with the Olipop team launching e-com, and Eli was part of it. And thank God you came in, and we just would go back and forth on all things retention. I think I'll never forget the time you got mad at me because I couldn't get a plain text email out for you fast enough. I like distinctly wrote a Slack message of you being like, why didn't you do this? And I was like, I am not the manager on the account. I don't know if you remember that, but I'll never forget it.
I certainly do. I think that when I joined, so I joined in June of 2020, which like Gina said, was a couple of months into just e-commerce for Olipop at all. Like, they started retail. Steven Vigilante was like, why don't we just do this online? And we just kind of put together this idea, which was slightly, probably 2-3 months before I joined. And Gina, you guys knew Steven for a while. And that's kind of how e-commerce and Olipop came around. But Lunar Solar was kind of the agency that we worked with to get everything started. So all the flows, all the campaigns, all the fun stuff. I think when I started, you know, we were kind of working closer with you, and then Ashley was on our account, and Akshay, and all the folks. But we were riffing on retention, I think, pretty early on. This is going back, like, I guess, like 2.5 years ago. And I think a lot of the thoughts that I had around, like, maybe we shouldn't just spam. Maybe we should think about A/B testing in a way that's sensible and not just like testing subject lines. Maybe we should think about retention, not just when people go winning the back, but like actually making sure people stick around. And Lunar was part of, on the dev side, we were working with you guys on subscription before Retexion became Retexion, and all things email, SMS. So I think that that's kind of our background on retention was way before Retexion and kind of when you guys launched Retexion. So I caveat, I'm an advisor for Retexion, and I've been kind of excited about working with Olipop, getting them on Retexion. And now we have a lot of questions to answer around why Jones Road is not on subscription yet, but we'll get to that. But I'm curious on, I guess, let's back up a tiny little bit. Why does an agency founder who's crushing it on the agency side say, let me get into subscription? Like, how did that story happen?
So it's been a hard year for e-commerce brands. And, you know, one thing that we've all been focusing on a lot more, certainly us at Jones Road have been focused on a lot, is retention, specifically owned audiences. What are you doing to provide the best possible customer experience and getting as much value and revenue as you can out of your existing customer cohorts? And an amazing way to do that is with an owned app using TapCart. I truly believe, you know, a few years ago when everyone was starting, you know, SMS programs for this, I really didn't think that brands needed to, you know, have an SMS program. And, you know, I kind of feel the same about apps. At first, I wasn't really sure. I thought a website was fine. But honestly, since learning about TapCart and seeing how great it is, I've actually become a believer, and I really believe that for most brands, having an app as a part of their retention tech stack for owned audiences is such a great idea. So what I want to do is just show you guys a little bit of the inside of TapCart, kind of just show you what it looks like, preview the app for you, and just kind of walk you through how easy it is to use it. It's super cool. Before I got started with TapCart, I thought that I really didn't know much about an app, but I figured it would take a ton of time, be super expensive to develop, thought you needed your own developers, but it's actually super simple. Tapcart set up this app for us in about a week. They do all of the design. They pretty much make it just so easy. So all you have to do, if you can plug and play and drag and drop just like a landing page builder, you can get an app going for your store pretty instantly, you know, in a matter of weeks at the very most, sometimes within a week. So I just want to kind of show you guys the app. I mean, look at it. It looks just like our website. It's pretty awesome. You can have, you know, your nav, you have your logo in here, you have a cart. You can, again, it's, look how easy it is just to edit the content. You can just, you know, change your images, change where it goes to, change the section. They've just got a bunch of these sections that you can kind of just put in there, especially if you want to do something. You know, an app is a great time, you know, to offer a great place to offer promos, exclusive things to your existing customers. You can put in here, you know, look how easy this is just to drag and drop, right? Like I said, if I can do it, anyone can. Just drag and drop, edit the content, remove it. You can change your, you know, your font. But yeah, it's a great time. It's a great place to offer promos. So you can definitely kind of make use of some of this existing content. Just kind of drag and drop some of these blocks in when you want. You can have videos in here. So it's great for content, exclusive content for your customers. Again, it looks just like our website. They were able to match it pretty perfectly. But, you know, one of the benefits is because it's an app, it loads super quickly. So yeah, again, you can see kind of how easy it is. You can edit, you know, theme settings in here. You can edit the navigation. It's super cool. They've got some really cool features to grow your app and your user base, where you can scan a QR codes. You can, you know, print or create a QR code that you can use online or anywhere. Direct people to your app if you want to, you know, direct people to your app to get a discount from your Facebook group, whatever it is. So this is a super cool one that I've seen a lot of brands use really well. You know, you can get a ton of data. You know, another thing I love is push notifications. So again, we're all trying to reach customers where, you know, ads are expensive, CPMs are up, it's getting harder to track. So we're all trying to reach places, and email is great, SMS is great, but it, you know, there's a cost to it. The cool thing about a push notification is there's no additional cost to send a push notification. So just like you're going to set up, you know, I'll show you exactly how to do it. Just like you're going to set up a text, you can set up a push notification just as easily. But with a text, there's a cost every time you send it out. And if your brand's growing, that can definitely add up. With a push notification, there's no incremental cost. So you can set up, you know, based on a product, you can do it based on a collection. So again, I think that this is super cool. You can do it based on a collection. You just write your copy in here. It's super easy. Change some settings. You can schedule it. It's awesome. It's super cool. It's a great way just, again, to be able to kind of another way to reach your customers without an additional cost. The great thing is, right, it takes up the screen. You can even make these full screen and there's no additional cost. You know, if I haven't said that already, I love it. I think it's super cool. Like I said, I think nearly everybody should consider having an app. And the best part is if you go to tapcart.com/downtochat, you can actually get up to 2 months free. Go to tapcart.com/downtochat. You can see this amazing landing page that I have. Just fill out your info, book a demo with the Tapcart team. And I highly recommend you do if you're trying to squeeze out more incremental revenue from your existing customers in 2023.
I think that my career path has been anything but like normal or follow any real flow. Before we started recording, I just shared with you, I was just on a call with my accountant and he was like, I got a couple of questions. Like, I've got you down still as career events manager. I feel like that might not be accurate anymore. And I was like, sure is not accurate anymore. But to go all the way back, actually started, you know, I worked for Red Bull throughout college as a Red Bull girl. And then I went to events with them. And then ended up going to work for a resort called Mountain Creek, where I ran events. And then they hired somebody to do digital marketing. And that person didn't do the digital marketing very well. So people stopped coming to my events. And I was like, I had a MySpace and I have a design degree. So that means I can run an email program here. And they let me do it. And I just took over the email program at this like massive resort with 12 different business units and like was running the content calendar, like 22-year-old Gina, just kind of winging it. And then I met Pearson, and he came in as a consultant, and the resort was gearing up for Chapter 11, not because of my email strategy. There were other factors, but,
hopefully
we started the agency together. Yeah. Right. Definitely not me, but yeah, we started, Lunar Solar together. Really, I just kind of like loved the retention side of things. I loved email marketing. And I really liked the tech that we got to work with. And like, that's my favorite part of Lunar Solar, was like piecing everything together, like understanding how you can create these like moments for customers and these like really just like interesting flows between like when somebody visits the website, like what that experience is like when somebody goes into Klaviyo, like based on the information you have. And then like when you're passing in a PostScript and like if you have a loyalty program and all these different things that kind of have to come together and you have to piece together a lot of different things. I think I found like the integrations and just all of that like more fascinating than the managed service piece. And as the agency grew, I became more and more hands-off with like the core accounts and like more into just kind of building the team out at the agency, and I had to stay on top of all the new technology and bringing that down like to the team. And I was always like vetting new tech as it came out, being like, oh, this is fascinating or this isn't. But then when we did Know, that was kind of like my first, I guess, like bite at, you know, could we build technology? And that was just like so fascinating for me. And then it just spiraled into everything we've got now with Retection.
When you think about the space, you know, subscription is fairly large, but it still feels like it's in its infancy. You think about like the other players in the space. I think Retention, I mean, just the name is more focused on retention than the average subscription. What was kind of your view on this? You're like, shit, I can do this entirely different. Like the way it's being done now, we can use a new spin on it. What was that story like?
It always felt disjointed. It always felt like we were trying, like you were talking about like VIP members and that was like the SMS list. And then like, you've got your email list and like, nobody was ever talking about like the subscribers. Cause it was just like, if anything, people were kind of like, oh, like don't email them. Like they're on subscription. We don't want to bother them. Cause then they'll unsubscribe from their like monthly shipment. Where to me, I'm like, those are your most passionate customers. And I think we're seeing a shift just in how people look at the whole marketing mix. It was so heavily focused on acquisition for so long. And now like retention is really kind of getting its moment in the mix where people are paying more attention to it. So looking at subscription, I was like, this generates a ton of revenue. Some brands, 50% in the core, of course it's all over, but a lot of these D2C brands, it's, you know, 50% or more of their monthly revenue is the subscription platform. So I thought like, if you could make it more of a marketing tool, like if you could make it a performance channel, like you could unlock so much there. And it was just kind of this thing that was like sitting that felt like it hadn't been innovated in years that I wanted to build.
I love it. I think that I've mentioned this in the past, but when I was at Olipop, like at points we're at 50%, and you talk about to the rest of the marketing team and they're always like, let's do a discount, let's do a promo. And it's always like excluding subscribers, right? Because it just doesn't make sense. We are already discounting so deep that it's like, obviously you'd want to exclude subscribers. And the way you're talking about it, it's like, so you're excluding your top customers, the people that are like, fuck it, I'm paying for Netflix and I'm also paying for my Olipop subscription. Like those are the people that theoretically would tattoo the name on their body. And it's like, why are we thinking about it that way, that it's like set it and forget it? And I think it's kind of like the old school mentality, right? It's like Verizon doesn't talk to you about your monthly subscription other than send you a bill, right? Like Netflix, I think, was one of the early ones that might be talking from my ass, but Netflix is one of the early ones that were like, okay, you've paid for this subscription. Let me kind of continue showing you ways that you can get value out of it, which I think is like this unique experience where it's like, if you watch this, you might like this. And the more you watch, the more you feel like the $8 or the $12 or the $14 is sensible. And I think that brands in the D2C universe are like, if we're sending your Olipop monthly, that's all we can give you is this tangible benefit. So let's just keep quiet as long as we can. And we'll kind of try to educate you in a way that's like hoping you don't cancel. Because I think historically, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you've seen otherwise, but I think a lot of brands saw that the most cancellations came from your next order is coming up, right? That's always like the spot that you drop.
Yep. Yeah. We've got a couple of things coming out, but to kind of help with that, I think like one of the big things is how like the experience engine plugs in and actually gives somebody like other actions to do on that email, where like you either notify them that they're getting a gift or there's upsells on that or like whatever. And if you're sending somebody an email and the only call to action is manage/edit your subscription, that's all you're telling them to go in and make a change instead of telling them like, hey, this is happening, or did you know you could add this? Did you know? And like that just like psychology element of just adding some other calls to action in that button can go a long way.
So I mean, I think the way I'm understanding this, and I've laboriously kind of like driven myself crazy about this at Olipop for the longest time, because I was like, what is the value other than this recurring monthly subscription of soda? Like, is there any other value we can kind of think about? And we thought about like exclusivity and access as like the number one, two, right? It's like, flavors you won't see anywhere else, early access, you know, whether we did like these little stickers, et cetera. But I think the core thought here is, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about Experience Engine and cool shit that you've done. But I think that for me, the big thing here is like trusting your idea of a subscription to just be recurring revenue and not have any relationship with these people just makes it a very, very basic kind of like give and get. And I think a lot of sad and lonely, angry people on Twitter like to think that that's the way it is, right? It's like subscription is just like you pay somebody money and you get this. But I think reality is that if I had to cut down, right? Like if I was like, shit, it's a recession, the first thing that's going is my like monthly soda, unless it means something more to me, right? So I think it's like, climbing a little higher on the hierarchy of needs, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that that's the way we have to think about it, right? We have to think about subscriptions as like, how can we add a little bit more on the hierarchy of needs, whether that's community or access or exclusivity or loyalty. It sounds like Retextion is thinking about it that way. It's like, this is a potential, like you talk about it as a marketing tool, but it's like a loyalty program. It's a marketing tool. It's a whole bunch of different things. So do you want to riff on like what Experience Engine is and what brands have done that were super cool?
Yeah. So this is what I haven't seen people use it for, but I think like, so on the topic of this, I think that, your subscribers should be your VIPs. Like they're your brand advocates. Subscribers are the ones that run around and talk about how much they love your product to 30 people. Like that's who a subscriber is. If they like it enough, especially in CPG, like if they are subscribing to a soda or a food, they love you. Like they're not just like nobody subscribes to a snack, like for fun. Like it's not like it's not like Netflix, but like it's part of their routine. Like you are in their daily or weekly life. Use those people, like use them to your advantage, not just to like milk their credit card every month, but like get their feedback. Like they care. Like we've got like, there's so much more attention now on like these Facebook groups and all these other things. Like you want to sample a new product and get feedback, do it to those people. Like they know the product inside and out. Like they care about you. They want to see it get better. So Experience Engine, what it is it's kind of like a promo builder for your subscribers. So you can sit in there and you can say, let's do a free gift on order number 3. Let's A/B test these two things. Let's do an upsell on order number 4. Let's look at anybody who doesn't have this product in their subscription and offer them this product because we know that's our hero product. So there's a lot of different ways that you can use it. I think like the most simple use cases, people are like, oh, we see a lot of fall off between order number 1 and order number 2. Can we do a free gift on order number 2 and see if that reduced skips? And I'm like, yes, absolutely. That's a great kind of like dip your toes in first way to use it. What I would like to see more of is using it to sample new products and getting feedback on those products. Like seeing if like, also if you sample things, can you get people to add those to their subscription upcoming? And then also I think that's a good measure, especially for brands at scale. You sample something and then you offer it as an upsell. How many people are jumping on it? Like, is that a good product that you actually should roll out? And what we do also is we allow like fixed like amount sampling. So you can just offer it to like 300 people if you knew that you were doing like a small size run or small quantity run of it. But yeah.
I think it's genius. It's so interesting to me how, you know, we talk about like referral, right? Referral is like some businesses have 1-3% of their business comes from referral, and it almost never is like, you can never refer a subscription, right? There are just these little things that just have not really been thought about, but I think sampling is another one, right? Like we have this community of people that are subscribing to like whatever it is, like Liquid IV or anything that's perishable. Like if somebody's subscribing, it's clear that in their head at some point, they're like, okay, I know that I like this enough that I'll have it almost every day of the month, or like, I like it enough that I'm having every other day, that I'm making this weird commitment that I'm going to have this in my life for a long period of time. Like the idea of, hey, I'll get it and I'll cancel it is something that brand owners are terrified of. But in the scheme of things, it's usually not very high, right? So people that subscribe are generally going to stick around. I think we've seen definitely at Olipop, like we've seen, there's always kind of like this point where if somebody makes it past order 3 or 4, most CPG brands see like 2, 3, and 4. If you can get it past there, you'll be around for 6 times. I think and I'm curious your thoughts on this, but I've always thought that the reason why that is the case is because a lot of first-time customers hop into a subscription. They haven't tried the product yet. It's just like an easy access entry point because it's cheaper. So they'll hop in on like this subscription deal. And the reason why they're not repurchasing is not because your subscription's garbage. It's because your product isn't to their liking. Do you see that? Is that a regular thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason why we bought Retention Engine. And like what we've been digging into there is the cancellation surveys are so telling. like it'll tell you, you know, what, and like it's just such an easy step to implement, and then you kind of know, and then you can also see it by SKU, which has been cool to see. Some brands, like, they'll just be like one SKU. I think one of the most interesting examples that we had was a coffee brand that has a light and a dark roast, and their cancellation cancellation was really high, and they were like, well, what's going on here? Then they dig in, they actually realize that it's the light roast that has this like crazy cancellation, not the dark. So they were like, huh, like, this is weird. They do the cancellation surveys and they're like, oh, it's way too light. Like, people just, it's so like harsh. Like, they actually really did want a dark roast. So what they did was implement, when you go to, what they started doing on the first order, putting a sample of the dark. And then when you go to cancel, there's a swap treatment. So when you go to cancel, because I don't like the flavor, it actually says, do you want to swap to the dark? And like, the saves went through the roof. And like, that was crazy. It was a company that thought they just had this like acquisition issue where people were coming in and the product, and it was just the one flavor is too harsh and they just needed to switch to a different flavor.
Wow. I love that story for so many reasons, but I'm always a sucker for like issue, hypothesis, try it out, and then like it changes your business. I think we've seen this across the board, right? Where people, I mean, I whenever I consult on any retention, the first question is like, why do people not like my product? And it's like, nobody ever asked the question, right? So I think that we've seen a lot of cancellation is just like usually the top 1, 2, 3, right? It's usually something to do with cost, right? But it's more so I have more than I need, which you're like, okay, so why don't you tell people a couple of days before, like, hey, proactively swap, skip, right?
Yep. Yep. I think one of the things I think about anytime we're building a product is like, how does this help the brand? And like, does this actually achieve it? I think I saw it so much on the agency side. Clients would come to us and they'd be like, hey, can you do this, this, and this? And I'd be like, why do you want us to do those things? And then when you kind of dig into the why, you're like, okay, that's actually not the end result that I would have done. Like, I would do it this way because of this. And like, it started this like behavior that I would do with the clients that I really trusted, because some would find it insulting when I'd ask, but I'd be like, don't tell me what you want me to do. Tell me like the problem you have, and then I'll tell you what we're going to do and how to fix it. And I've kind of taken that approach into subscription. Like, we get feature requests all the time. I think like the most common one is like, oh, we want a subscription that like gets cheaper every month that you subscribe to it. And I'm like, that's a horrible idea. Like, that just like erodes some margins on the product, like to the top. Like, we want to reward the best customers, but we don't want to reward them by making them a customer that we end up losing money on. Like, that's horrible business idea. Like, what can we do with those customers? Like, how do we reward them in other ways, with other samples, get their feedback, like things like that, where like, yes, maybe it's like a better rubric in the subscription, but they actually are spending more money. We're bringing the AOV up. And so, yeah, I think a lot of just like asking what people want, and then kind of thinking through what's the best way to get that result is so important.
Gee, the story about people asking like, hey, can we have a subscription that keeps getting cheaper is so funny, because I think every single marketer is part of a marketer life cycle where you come up with this idea and you're like, this is genius. Like, this is the greatest idea I've ever had. Genius. And then you realize that your VIP customers couldn't give a shit about the price. Like, they're buying it because they love it. If somebody bought something 7 times, like, they don't want it cheaper. They want to feel closer to this mission or the brand. Like, in a perfect world, right? It's like, if somebody purchased something 7 times, they spent more money on Olipop than ketchup or anything else in their fridge. They're like, hey, can I be part of the decision-making on the next product? Or, hey, can I get a sample before? Like, how can you make somebody feel special? So I think that's spot on. What I think this is like a good conversation to riff on before we move on. It's like, are there any novel ways how people took these VIP customers and said like, hey, surveying or sampling or anything like that you've seen that you're like, this is insane and more people should do it?
Yeah. I mean, we're working with a couple of brands now to roll some stuff out for next year. So I haven't seen it done like perfect, but like the way that I would run it, in my next life, if I ever became a brand owner, which I'm pretty sure I'm done. I think we're going to stick with tech at this point. Like, we got the tech and services down. Like, that's what I have to learn about inventory. Like, that just feels like it's a not for me problem. But the way that I would like to run it, like, and you could do it so simply, is like, you just use the experience engine. You have it add this like sample. It's its own product. Just email, set up a flow in Klaviyo. Anybody who is an active subscriber and has gotten this product, send them this survey. Like, so simple. Like, you could set that up and then you just start getting like the survey responses on that sample product that you did. And like, now your most engaged people are going to get, like, cause they're going to be like, they're interested in it. You can, you know, offer them something. I bet you don't even have to, like, when you email out like a survey, you know, you're expecting like a 1% response, not to your subscribers, not to somebody who's like bought in and got this free sample in their thing. And you're asking them if they like it or not. You're going to see that survey response much higher, probably 20%+. And I think like that is like the easiest way to set it up. I'm excited that we've got a couple of brands that are ready to roll that out next year.
Yeah. It's so exciting. I think the other interesting thing to me is there's so much of just confusion in the space around data, right? There's so many brands are using, like, whether it's Octane or Typeform, they're collecting all this data and they hardly ever use it, which gives me the ick so bad. It's like, you're asking me like, hey, do you like this? When I onboarded with you, I answered all of those questions that should give you a really good idea. Something we think about at Jones is like, we know like 70% of our customers have gone through a quiz, which is bonkers high, right? And we're driving a ton of new traffic month over month. And all these people tell us, like, if their skin is dry, if it's oily, if it's balanced, if it's, you know, they're telling us the color of the face makeup they generally use. Like, they're giving us all this shade information plus all their purchase information. And with the amount of SKUs we have, it's not like a Olipop one soda. It's like we have a ton of SKUs. So we see so much based on buying behavior. And I you know, we had Joanne on a while ago and we were talking about this, but I still think that we haven't scratched the surface as to what we can do based on like understanding of like the regular basket analysis, right? Like if you bought this, you're more likely to buy that. So let me hop into Klaviyo and kind of like make sure that that's the general cross-sell or upsell. But I think in subscription land, it's like if we know that somebody subscribed to a mascara, 2 months later, we know that the ideal upsell from a mascara is a Miracle Balm because those two products usually go well together. Based on the whatever they put in the survey, we can also use that in the quiz data. We can also use that to understand that we can assume that Magic Hour will be a better hit than an Au Naturel or whatever shade we go to on Miracle Balm. So I think that's something that we've, you know, I was talking to Sean from Ridge last night, and he was like, most brands spend way too much time thinking about which product they should upsell instead of saying, like, if you upsell anything, like if you upsell one single product, you'll make more money than stressing and not upselling anything. But I think when brands get to like 50, 100 mil, 150 mil, it's like these tiny, tiny changes drive a dramatic increase. And I think the subscription piece is so fascinating because at Olipop, we've never done like, hey, can we get you onto another product? Because it was all, I mean, it was different flavors, but it's all like, how much soda can one person drink with that amount of fiber before we have a problem, right?
Fair.
So it's just like, we're like another case, a third case, swap. Like we did a lot of swapping. We're always highlighting different flavors and that was like instrumental to keeping people around. But I think the idea of like understanding product, you know, customer journeys based on like your broader product SKU assortment, it's such a fascinating idea that I don't think many brands are doing enough of, right? We just try to cross sell on like, oh, this is the most expensive thing, or cross sell is like, oh, this is like ideal for tomorrow, instead of thinking retention. Like 6 months later, we know like LTV by product, right? So we know anyone that purchases mascara has a significantly higher LTV than most other products. We know people that purchase Miracle Balm, you know, like we have all this data. So how can we use, it's something I'm thinking about, is like, how can we use subscription to create this almost somewhat ideal, like obviously we don't want to push people in any specific corner, but somewhat ideal customer journey of like, if you fuck around and stay on this route somewhat, you'll be a very valuable customer to us. And the last thing, which I think this is me, this is me saying like, hey, I think this is a really good idea. And then you'll tell me like, you'll be like, this is absolutely stupid. But my idea is like, if there was a solution to tell me like, hey, this is based on what this customer purchased and based on all the other data that we pulled in, you'd be better off upselling this customer X, not because of like cart upsells is like, here's how to make more money today. But like based on customer journey, if they went from this and then they upsold to that and then they bought that, that's number one. If we have like this journey based on like other product purchasing behavior. Down to Chat is brought to you by Peel. I know Black Friday this year has been nuts, and I wanted to take 2 minutes to walk you through some of the things that we look at in Peel to understand how we did retention-wise as well as obviously acquisition-wise. This is being shared on video if you're on Spotify or YouTube. If not, you can take a look there, but I'll also try to make it as audio-friendly as I can. So first things first, we are always looking at distribution by order number to understand like what percentage of these customers that came in over Black Friday are first time versus second time versus third time or fourth, etc. So in our case, you can see 55% of the customers were new customers, which is obviously amazing, but also interesting to see that there are folks that have ordered 6, 7, 8, 9 times that are still coming back. That are still coming back on Black Friday. The next thing we look at is returning customers by cohort to get a better understanding of, are there spikes that we're looking at in terms of, you know, the second month, third month, fourth month. What you can see here is January, February, March customers had a spike in April, May, which is when we launched our foundation, but also again around Black Friday, which is obviously amazing to see that we're kind of re-engaging these folks. Another fun dashboard we look at is year over year. So having a better understanding, not just on the gross sales and orders, but also on AOV, products sold, et cetera, and you know, discounting if applicable. The last interesting thing I love, we've spoken about audiences in the past, but this is especially interesting because we can see first-time customers that came in Black Friday to get a better understanding of obviously their AOV, their LTV and all that fun stuff. But we can also export this audience into Klaviyo to send them unique messaging, or Attentive to send them a text, or hell, even turn them into a direct mailer audience of customers, which is great. The last thing, which I don't have on this loom, is looking at gifting. So we can kind of take a group of customers and segment the folks that have different shipping and billing, and then assume that they are sending gifts and maybe message them differently, which is fun, and a different way to slice and dice, which is the name of the game. One last thing for listeners of Down to Chat, if you want to give Peel a shot, you can go to peelinsights.com/more/downtochat for 20% off the first 3 months. So again, 20% off for the first 3 months, go to peelinsights.com/more/downtochat. Second idea, I'm really going out today. Second idea, if we can say based on this behavior, like if a customer bought a product, then repurchased in 18 days, and their first, for example, like they bought a product, bought another one in 18 days, their AOV on their second order is higher than the first. Like whatever those characteristics are, is that enough for us to tag these people as VIPs early on and say like these people aren't a VIP, but they will be one. So start treating them as such today.
Yeah, I think it like all depends on the like models that you're using. I think like we're in this like fun stage now with all the different AI stuff that came out about writing, where people are now starting to be more focused on it. I think I've learned so much already from the retention engine team, just around like the different models that you can do and like the live learning models that we use, and just like asking them those types of questions of like, you know, what type of machine learning model would you use to calculate those things? And there's a lot of different ways to do it. And I think, to take a step back, like one of the earliest times that we started to see that was how people were doing predictive next order date models. And you have some brands that are doing it based on the product. So you've got, you know, companies that are like, all right, well, like people who buy this product come back and they buy this product like X amount of days later. But what it doesn't factor in, especially with F&B, is like, okay, great. So people who buy Cherry Cola Olipop come back, you know, 30 days later. And it's like, well, what if I have two people in my house? Like, well, what if I, you know, like, what if I have it every day? Like, what if it's only I have it on weekends? Like, what? So there's so many other factors that like start to interrupt that. And then also it's like, do you look at all the products in the cart that they bought together? Olipop's a bit easier than something like Jones Road, because Olipop, if you're buying like one Cherry Cola, one orange, one, you know, like whatever, you can't really have seven a day. But Jones Road, if I'm buying all those things and my cart value is really high, I might be using all of those products daily. So there's different ways like to look. So when you look at the cart, do you want to look at it at the cart size, or do you want to look at it on the individual product SKU? And every business is different. I think it's important to understand how the platforms you're using, what models they're using, and if that model is the right fit for your product catalog. So that's a like very distracted from what you were saying, but it kind of like starts to think about how I think about how you would start to model out, you know, what should be the predicted next product and what the timing on that product should be. And I think a lot of people try to hyper focus on it, but really, like to your point earlier, start smaller, like be like, okay, like we should just offer everyone at least some type of upsell of our best product. And I think what I like most about the experience engine, where I tell people to start, is like whatever your hero product is, even if 50% of people are subscribed to that, that means 50% of people aren't. If they're not on that, offer them that product. That's the easiest win. Anybody who doesn't have this in their cart, offer them that. And that's, I think, a good place to start. And then people who do have your best product, what's your second best product? And go in trying to figure out, and you have a product catalog of like 50 products, like what each one is the right upsell to. And then you get into this logic of like, what if there's three items in the cart? Then what do we pick? Like, it starts to get too crazy. So I would say start on the simpler side.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. So all in all, you're saying my ideas are $1 billion ideas, and we should run with it.
They are billion-dollar ideas. They are going to take you a very long time to map out every single product and what somebody could buy. And if Gina buys a mascara and 14 days later buys a lip balm and then does this, like, there's just so many different factors. Like, you just, we can't estimate what the customer journey is going to be for everyone.
We need the robots.
We do. We need more sophisticated robots even than we've got now. And we need the correct models applied.
No, I think the modeling piece is interesting. The other thing to think about is, like, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, our hero SKU, our Miracle Balm, like, people finish that in a month, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months. Mascara once a month, right? So it's like you have these different product categories that are entirely different. The other thing to think about, which most marketers are, I mean, I think there are a few, like Cody is kind of in the middle now where he's like, you know, at heart has this direct response background, but is now a very thoughtful retention person as well. But I think people go one of two ways, right? It's either look at the data statistically, people that purchase again, purchase within 18 days, right? Like, they have these numbers. And then the other side is like, well, if somebody just purchased $150 of makeup, and some of it will take them months to use, like, should we be pushing them to repurchase in 10 days? Like, whether or not that's like on paper, the time that they'll repurchase, like, is that an ideal customer journey? I think that's the most fun I have at Jones is like Joanne, myself, Cody, like, we're always kind of like push and pull every single which way. Cause it's like, there's no like wrong way, right? It's like, you can, you know, there are plenty of brands that you'll order something and half hour later you'll get an upsell email. But also I think there's like, when you have multiple products and every product has a different like shelf life or usage timeline, I think it's always interesting. Talk about subscription. Like, how would you create a subscription when different products take different amounts of time like to use? How do you think about that?
I think that the key thing there is like really training the customer on how to use your subscription platform and how to use the app. And I think it's been kind of fascinating to see like logins like increase dramatically month over month, and people start to get more comfortable in their portal and they really do start to customize it, and they skip one item one month and they add something else the next month. And like, you really kind of want it to be fluid, like, especially with a product catalog like that. Like, you don't want somebody who just like subscribes to this one product and then like, oh, they forget about it and whatever. You want them to be kind of living in there. And I think that's like what we are trying to build with Retection, is like that customer portal should feel like the customer's like hidden part of the website, like their secret special place where they get to go in and they get to modify their order and they get special deals or promos or whatever, and they can add products and they can remove products. And like, you want the customer to be really like really comfortable like in that portal, moving things around, because like I said, with a product catalog like that, it's not going to be perfect. We can't come up with the perfect thing that's going to be like, okay, this product's going to ship to you every this amount of days, that amount of days. People use makeup differently. It depends on what you have going on in the month. Like, are you working from home a lot? Are you going to the office? Are you putting on makeup every day? Like, things just like change, where if customers feel like they can go in and they can change the next order date and add and swap things, they're going to stay subscribed much longer.
I love it. As you're talking, like, we discussed this at the beginning, but we've had zero prep. We came up with this idea last night and recorded this morning. As you're talking, I'm thinking of like the questions that I would have. I think a few of them that we should probably get to is, number one, win backs. I think win backs have gone, you know, like it's fascinating because most of it does nothing. It ends up being like a hardcore discount and gets nowhere, but sometimes it works. I'd love to hear when it's a good idea, when it's not. The other question before I forget, are there spaces or brands that shouldn't be on subscription? And the third question, which we'll get to, is if you don't want a discount, is there a cool way to do a subscription without discounting? So let's run it back and start from the beginning. Winbacks, like if somebody churns, is there the ultimate strategy to win them back?
I think that there's best practices to be put in place. I don't think that everyone can always be won back, but if somebody subscribed to your product and they liked the product, they're win backable. Like, you can get them. I think that the strategy I like the most is using a quick action in Klaviyo. One, you send somebody a note when they first cancel. Hey, it was a bummer. Just noticed you canceled. Like, you know, if this was a mistake, you can always use this link to reactivate. You know, if not, we're sad to see you go. I think it's important to follow up like the 30 days later, the 60 days later, whatever the right like usage cadence is. If your most popular like timing is 30 days, then do it 30 days. But if you're like, you know, a 3 month thing and somebody just got your product and then canceled, you know, you don't need to hit them up in 30 days. But starting to remind them of the product benefits is like, for me, the best way to do it. And be like, hey, are you not feeling X, Y, Z, like all the reasons that people would use your product in the first place, and start to list those out and almost like create FOMO to the customer of like, hey, like there was a reason why you used this at one point. Like, are your lashes not feeling luminous? I don't know. Why do people, what are the perks of the mascara? Like, are you, you know, are your lashes looking clumpy? Like, are
they not looking? I'm not going to fix it.
Yeah. Like, are you not looking like whatever? that to me is like, you know, feel your best, like, you know, resubscribe and like join whatever today. Those I think help. I think that offering a discount can help. I like Gift with Purchase better. I think the more, we kind of are looking at it, like, I think I'm going to becoming a Gift with Purchase girl. I think that that is really what I want to lean into more than just steeper discounts, especially with like the types of brands we're talking about when the AOV is so low. Like, it's like, oh man, don't save 10, save 15. It's like, oh, cool. Another 75 cents. Like, great. Like, people realize that, where like the perceived value of a gift is a lot higher.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Gift with Purchase in general, I mean, Cody was the one that really kind of pushed that into me. But it's just an easy way to not discount and give more value. Right. So I think it's like, if you are giving Olipop for 25% off on Black Friday, and then, you know, the next month kind of stings, right? It's like 25% more for the same, or whatever it is, right? Like 15% more. Even if it's a few dollars, it's like, it's kind of like in your head, you're like, once you got it at a steep discount, it's a little bit difficult. But the Gift with Purchase, for the most part, I mean, like when people are sour on Twitter about it, like a Gift with Purchase, I don't think, I consistently have to remind myself that these aren't regular consumers. Like, these are like people that spend 12 to 16 hours a day on marketing Twitter. Like, these people are marketers. So obviously we have this discerning eye, but realistically consumers are super excited. Like, when I think of a consumer, I think about my mom, right? She would spend the extra $3 to get the free shipping. She would love a Gift with Purchase. She loves a good discount. She loves the Kohl's cash. She loves the Children's Place $15 back, signs up for the credit card to get the 30% off her first purchase. Like, that's the regular shopper, not us. Like, we're crazy. So I think there's that too.
I mean, also, I think back to like when I was younger and like my aunt would take me to go buy makeup, or like even my mom, and like the what would get them to be like, oh, like we could spend, you know, $50 today with this company, was because they were doing like the gift bags. So I don't know if you're familiar with this. I don't know how much makeup you bought as a kid, Eli, but like, you know, like they would be like, oh, we got to go to Macy's today. Yeah, no, not a ton of Lancome when you were younger, but I remember being like, oh, well, like we got to go. If you want, you know what, why don't you get the Lancome foundation? Because when you do a $50 purchase, you actually get this gift thing, and it has like two lip gloss samples and whatever and blah, blah, blah. And you get your little makeup bag with the samples in it. And like, that was enough to be like, let's go buy that thing that usually, you know, we get you the CVS brand, but you know, today we're going to splurge because the perceived value is so much higher. And like, legacy brands have been doing that stuff for years, and then we kind of like lost touch with it. I mean, just started discounting on e-com. And I think that like the Gift with Purchase stuff, like, yes, there are brands doing it now, but I think we need to do more of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, not that long ago, before I was at Jones and was strictly using Jones, my wife used to go to the, wherever she went, and bought like the Estee Lauder counter that had like the free whatever bag, and you get like $900 a full size for whatever with this discount. And I think it's 100% what it is, right? Like, people choose brand based on whatever small little discount or push that they have. So I think it's spot on. The second question, what are there brands or industries that you're like, no, this is not a subscription use case, and they should just not?
I think there are brands that I definitely just don't.
Gina says no. She's like, everyone should be on subscription.
No. There are certain things that just don't make sense. If it's a product, like, I mean, like, nobody needs a mattress subscription. Like, nobody needs, like, if it's a product that you don't replace, like, every 6 months, like, you don't need a subscription for it. I'm trying to think of other things, like bedding. I don't really need like a subscription, like, unless it was like a yearly reminder. I think the only thing that I kind of like for subscription on the longer end is like when it becomes a hygiene thing and it's like, hey, like you should probably like, you know, replace your underwear or your socks or like whatever, Quip, every X amount.
What? I was saying like Quip with the toothbrush. Yeah.
Exactly. We're like, that was something that we thought was not a subscription product, but like really like you should be swapping that out. And like, I think about subscription as almost like a reminder. I recently became a subscriber of Billy, the razor company. And mm-hmm. I was not swapping out my razors enough. Like I would just like start getting razor burn on my legs and then be like, oh, guess it's time. Like that was my way of like reminding myself mm-hmm. of when to swap out my razor. Where like now it's like, to me, I look at it like that. But to get back to the question of what I think doesn't belong on subscription, yeah, I think anything that's like you don't need to replace that often, if we're looking at doing more than a 6-month subscription, like it's just, that's not it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've two things that come to mind as you're saying this. Number one, MeUndies like changed my entire idea around subscription. The fact that they have like a zillion people signed up on an underwear subscription blew my mind. Like, I think that's, to me, that's like, you know, and we had Dan, who was like the VP of marketing on the Olipop side as a consultant. And that was always the conversation I had. Like, he was also the VP of marketing at Ritual. And I was like, that's a vitamin. Like, you take it every day. It's a no brainer to subscribe to it. But having underwear, like they just created this idea that it doesn't have to be like, you don't have to think of it as a default replenishable product to enjoy a subscription, which I think is mind-blowing. I think they were like, I guess they were the first to kind of change the complete mindset around subscription, right? It was like a product that usually you wait until it, you know, you're completely ripped and you're like, okay, I'll buy 10 pairs versus like getting underwear every month, which I think is bonkers. But it works, right? Like they crush it. And I think it's a testament to the way they thought about the marketing of it, right? It's like, this is a way to feel a certain kind of way every month and treat yourself. And they've gone deep on like SKU assortment. So you're never getting the same thing and it's always fun and there's always new collaboration. And I think subscription brands have a lot to learn from the MeUndies of the world, but also the Rituals of the world, which like took something mundane and made it feel sexy and cool. And people subscribe for a very long time. Athletic Greens, another great example of like they own a time of day, right? It's like this, it's a morning ritual and they've gone so deep that people subscribe for 12, 16, 18 months, which is bonkers. Like I have not done anything daily for 12 months like that.
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
Yeah. I'm super excited. We started working with MeUndies a couple months back on the Lunar Solar side. And it's been great to kind of get under the hood there a bit and kind of learn about what they're doing and the different partnerships and the different SKUs and all that stuff that they've got going on. I think that they crush it. It was fascinating to me jumping into the subscription side of things with Rotection to learn that like sock subscriptions, underwear subscriptions, and like toilet paper subscriptions are the sneakiest but biggest subscription brands.
Wow.
It's crazy how many like who was putting toilet paper on subscription? I had no idea, but like apparently the rest of the world is cat litter. Things like that. That you're
you and I, you and I are not.
No, we weren't. Well, no, I am now. I sure am now. But it was all these things that like are so typically not sexy and are like not this. I think we just are in this like this Olipop, like this like CB, like where we kind of live in this like F&B place. But all these other things that like actually like can be kind of practical, like you should be switching out like your socks, like you shouldn't be wearing the same socks. Like my boyfriend's moving in recently, brought over all of his socks, and I was like, we're getting you some new, like
we're swapping getting these.
Yes, like I think that's actually, we already did Christmas.
Are we going Bombas? Are we going top, or are we kind of like finding a middle there? Because I think I've heard so much about Bombas that I'm just like, do I need $50 socks or $20 socks? Maybe.
Ooh, see, I don't know. I did bulk buy socks because the sock brand that I like doesn't have a subscription model. If they were on Shopify, I would have hustled my way in there already. But I love Stance socks. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. It's like more of an action sports brand.
I've seen them.
Yeah,
I've seen them. I think I need to up my sock game. I think my sock game is J. Crew Factory right now, and it's like one of those where I wait the entire year and then all my no-show socks are just ripped into a bunch of pieces and then I buy more. I've never thought about, but that's another thing, right? You never think about socks as like this huge splurge until you have brands like the, you know, the Bombas of the world that are like selling $18-$24 socks. And I think the subscription, I do think that MeUndies was one of those early brands that took like a everyday mundane thing that you don't that you restock on once every 5 years and turned it into a subscription. So I think sock brands can give them a big thank you. But I mean, socks is also, you think about it, you're like, okay, $12 a month or whatever it is. And every month you have that feeling of like opening up a new pair of socks and feeling that like it's a great feeling. It's just mm-hmm. like, I never want to spend $80 on socks. But if it's $12 a month, you're like, over a year, all my socks end up being new, right?
Yeah. And it feels good. Like, I mean, everyone likes that little package. I used to have a, I can't remember which one, which makeup box subscription I had, but I loved opening it every month. Like, I loved getting it and being like, oh my God, look at all these cool things I got. I did eventually cancel it because I'm just like not an eyeshadow. Like, I'm very simple makeup. Like, I mean, I got like a little bit of eyeliner and like a little bit of blush on. So I just started like stockpiling eyeshadow palettes. And once I had about 10 eyeshadow palettes that I don't know how to use eyeshadow, I was like, this probably is not the right subscription for me. But the amount of joy I got from getting the box every month where it was just like, oh, look at this surprise. So maybe, yeah, the sock model is probably better for me.
The other question I had, which I think is a fun one, is what subscriptions is Gina on? You already kind of mentioned the Billy. What other subscriptions does
I'm an Ouroboros subscriber. I have an Ouroboros a day. Except right now I'm out at my house because my subscriptions have been going to my office, and it's like devastating to me today that I don't have an Ouroboros.
Super easy to switch. You can just hop into the Retexion backend, and
I am aware of how easy it is, but it's one of those things that isn't a problem until it's a problem when I'm like here and I'm like, I wish I had this, and I never just go in and fix it because, you know, that's just not in my DNA. I'm like, I'm going to do that later. And then it's not a problem later, so don't think about it. But yeah, so there is that. There is Olipop, Billy, toilet paper. I'm not going to share the brand because I'm trying to get them to move over. What else do I love? I just did teeth whitening. So I'm on a teeth whitening program now. So we'll check back in a little bit. I think that's it.
Subscription. I mean, I think the
snacks, the funny part about me is when I was like knee deep on the I'm sorry. But yeah, all the food stuff.
Yeah. No, we have like a, well, for those at home, we have like a 3 second delay on this janky situation here. So it feels like we keep interrupting one another, but when the audio actually comes out, it'll make sense. It'll just be like, we just keep stopping because we have this little fun delay going on. But the funny thing I was going to say is that when I was at Olipop knee deep in pushing people to get on subscription, I was on an interview and somebody said like, which subscriptions are you on? And I said zero. And I thought for a second, I was like, this is us as marketers that we're very good at explaining. I can tell you 12 reasons why you should get on Olipop subscription, but the only subscription I'm on is Netflix and it's my brother. So I hope he doesn't toss me off. Like that's, I think, hysterical, but
that's true. I didn't think about all of the those types of subscriptions, like my Netflix, my HBO, everything from my phone, all the different apps that I'm subscribed to. Like, I mean, everything. An apt monitor, my menstrual cycle, you know, all these different things that like you have that you're subscribed to that all plug in that are more like digital subscriptions.
Right. I mean, I think of subscriptions, I guess, like when something comes out of your account every day. So I guess in that framework, yeah. My lease is a subscription, which is also like funny, right? Because I think that I've gone through quite a few leased cars in the last decade. And it's funny to see how different brands think about it differently in terms of life cycle. And I think that was fascinating to me, how certain brands would message me never. And other brands would be like, you're 4 months in. Here's what to think about. Or you're 6 months in. How's it going? And I swear that some brands have gotten like plain text email energy going on. And like some car dealers, not dealers, but some car brands are thinking about it the way CPG does. And they're like, I've gotten plain text. And I'm like, I know that's plain text, you sneaky motherfucker, but also like everything, right? They're sending follow-ups. They're sending 6 month check-ins, 9 months. You're almost up to your oil change. Like, I think it's thought about similarly, which I think people generally think about a lease as a lease, but it is a subscription, right? It's harder to get out of, but you can sell your car and you can buy it out and sell it. Like, you can get out of it. Thoughts?
I mean, I like messaging people. I like building a relationship. I think that your subscribers are your number one fans, I think that you should build them into brand advocates, and that messaging them and building a relationship with them, like, will make it stronger in the long run. And like, yeah, you're going to remind a couple people to cancel early, but those are going to be the people that got pissed that you sent them the box that month and they didn't see a reminder to cancel. And then you have to go back in and refund it, and they're not going to send the package back. So like, you're doing yourself a favor.
Question. Last minute here. Where do people find you? Where do they find Retextion? Take some time to plug, do the thing.
Yeah. I'm on Twitter. I feel like that's like the easiest way to get in touch with me is Twitter, but then everything on Retextion, just fill out a form on the site. That's also easy. So if you send me a Twitter DM to set up a demo and I got to do with Calendarly and all of that, that is not the most, that's not the best way to get in touch. So definitely head over to retextion.com and just fill out a form on the site, and we'll get back to you within 24 hours and set up a demo.
What's your username on Twitter?
At Gina Pirelli now. We went from email like a G, now it's just at Gina Pirelli. Midtown Gina.
Are we not emailing like a G anymore?
We are definitely still emailing like a G, but I had the opportunity to get my, like, just my name, and like my Instagram handle's always just been at Gina Pirelli, and I really wanted it. I wanted to just have it be at Gina Pirelli. So that's what we're doing now.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Emil, and I look forward to some JRB subscription news. But until then, thanks, Emil.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.